And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, we'll feature Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese of the Symphony of the Americas in conversation with Charles Greenfield. Their Summerfest opens tonight at Sunshine Cathedral in Fort Lauderdale. Founder Stephen Krams and director Robert Rosenberg of the Coral Gables Art Cinema join film critic Dan Hudak. Chef Norman Van Aken returns with a word on food, and our Broward Arts calendar today features Jody Horn-Leschinski. In 1988, the Broward County Cultural Division set in motion their cultural master plan. Its effects have been monumental in supporting and expanding the cultural arts in Broward County and beyond. It set in motion what we now know of as the nonprofit mecca of art support, ArtServe. In 1993, three fundamental arts organizations, Business Volunteers for the Arts, Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, and the ArtServe Business Center, were merged under the banner of ArtServe. Their vast scope of services has continued to expand to meet the demands of the South Florida arts community. Their programs assist and strengthen local artists and nonprofit cultural groups in their business-related and marketing efforts. In fact, ArtServe has become a national model for amplifying the economic growth of the arts throughout the country. With us today to talk about this incredible arts organization and its great impact on South Florida's arts environment is their new president and CEO, Ms. Jay Abate. And welcome to South Florida Arts Beat, Jay.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Good to have you with us. Now, you bring to your new job quite an extensive background in the arts, former marketing manager with the Broward Center for the Performing Arts for 8 years, and a former board member on ArtServe. So it must feel like a homecoming to you of sorts.
Oh, it's a dream come true, to be honest with you. You know, I left an organization that I love, truly love to this minute, and went to an organization that I love and that serves the community in so many great ways. So it's just a dream come true.
Now, as a president, no doubt you have a big to-do list, but tell me, has ArtServe's mission changed over the years?
The mission has expanded, if you will. You know, we just keep expanding the number of services, programs, and facilities that we have to offer to meet the needs of growing cultural offerings that we have in Broward County and throughout the Tri-County area as well. And so we just keep building new programs to meet new demand and new need in the community.
As the new president, let's talk about your goals for the organization. What's going to happen in the following years?
Well, the short term is we're doing some facelifting, which is really exciting. We are facelifting the dance studio. We are upgrading our auditorium, which is a wonderful resource for bands, for seminars, workshops, everything that people have to offer. It's a great place to do open mic nights, jazz concerts, you name it, small theater groups. So this summer we're doing some facelifting for that. We are also renovating our gift shop. If there's any artists out there that are listening, we are going to be looking for some new artists to exhibit in the gift shop. Jewelry, glasswares. I would love to have some more wearable art, all kinds of things like that. We are also going to try to initiate more student engagement in the coming months. Have a special student rate, an open night where students can come in and hang out and socialize and sketch and jam and just kind of make ArtServe their home to cultivate that next generation of artists. So we have a lot of things coming on.
For more information, you can always find out online at artserve.org or call them directly at 954-462-8190. And you're all over the social services available today as well, on Twitter, no doubt, and Facebook.
Oh, yeah, social media. We integrate it as much as possible. When people come to the center, we don't say put your phones away. We say start tweeting and start Facebooking. And we want to get the word out because we have this great facility that is available to cultural organizations, artists, and everything from office space to studio space to gallery space where people can teach, and we have acting classes, photography classes, you name it.
The Gold Coast Jazz Society has been with you for years, and within your building you've got the Stonewall Museum and any other entities in there?
Absolutely. Well, a lot of organizations, about 18 call it home, mm-hmm. Everything from Arts United to South Florida Watercolor Association and Starlight Children's Foundation. It's a wide spectrum of nonprofits and cultural organizations. And we do have some spaces available if there's any other organizations looking for really, really affordable rental space. The offices are beautiful. They start at just $150 a month. Mm. And you have this amazing shared facility with free parking. And it's just a really wonderful asset that we have in Broward County.
Let's talk about the voluminous services that you all provide for the arts community. Echo Art Therapy, co-op, marketing program, which is sheer genius, the arts calendar. Where do you want to start?
Where do I start? Well, we can certainly start with the co-op marketing program, because that is a really unique program that Broward County has offers. I think Jody Horn-Shinsky was actually the organizer and founder of it. And it has been a lifeline to a lot of organizations, especially in the last few years during the economic downturn, where a lot of our wonderful treasures in this county would have had to choose between whether they market their performances or they don't. And it actually provides funding, a third to half of a media buy to these organizations that qualify. So it's really been a lifeline. It's allowed them to get through that tough period. And we encourage anybody who has any questions about it to contact ArtServe and participate in it. ArtsCalendar.com is also another wonderful treasure. People can post any event on it in Broward County. They can, whether you're a musician, whether you're having a performance, whether you're an actor looking for work, anything, any type of posting can be made to Arts Calendar. It's free, and we do a lot of promotion for it to keep building awareness, and so it's another great asset.
So getting back to your co-op marketing program, you need to be a not-for-profit, and
yes,
you need to have events in Broward County. Any other restrictions?
Not really. There's some disclaimers that will have to be on the ad, so mm-hmm. that people connected to our cultural division. But other than that, no. And so we just encourage everybody to, you know, seek us out and ask for it. And I also wanted to go back to the mention of EcoArt and some of these mm-hmm. other arts and education programs that we offer. They've been tremendous learning tools, but we also hire professionals to administer them. So we're actually giving business to artists that are getting paid to do things that are teaching students, and especially teaching those students that are not necessarily book learners. They really need a more visual way of learning. So that's just one of the many, many programs that we have to offer.
Any new programs coming up for this summer? I think you were telling me about a puppeteer?
Oh, we have an amazing, the creative genius Jim Hammond came up with this wonderful program offered free to Broward County students 16 to 19. It's called Broward Entrepreneurs, and it's these kids will get mentored in theater for the entire summer. It culminates in a performance at ArtServe, and by the end of the summer, they will have learned everything from lighting, staging, production, entrepreneurship, marketing. And they'll be able to pack their production in a bag and take it on the road and start making money as students. And it's really amazing. He is amazing. We hope the long-term vision is that we can continue to get funding for the program and expand it to other genres, to the dance, to music, and et cetera.
Man, that's just wonderful. Such a big program coming up on July 20th. More info at artserve.org, or you can call 954-462-8190. Many other programs available, too, at ArtServe. But don't miss their multimedia explosion of live art, live bands, indie films, comic art, social commentary, interactive installations, fashion, food trucks, graffiti challenge. The Red Eye. Tell me about the Red Eye.
Oh, I couldn't have said it better. Red Eye is just a celebration of street art. It was the brainchild of our managing director, Byron Swart.
Who joins us today.
Yes.
We'll have him back.
I hope so. And he really conceived this back before street art was really more celebrated, before Wynwood was popular. And it was really about channeling the efforts of kids that were defacing public property, saying, you know, you can actually earn money if you channel those talents onto canvas. So he started the cans to canvas, spray cans to canvas. And it's just grown into this, you know, huge sort of where, you know, the gallery collides with street culture. So, and it's going to be bigger and better than ever this year. Again, it's July 20th. Tickets are $10 at the door, $7 in advance. And you definitely want to get them in advance because you don't want to wait on lines, it's, you know, or miss anything that's happening there. And this year is really exciting because it's going to be a celebration of our local talents gone good. For example, we have Torch Perkins coming back. She actually won the very first Red Eye Best in Show, and she is now very much in demand around the country, and she's going to be coming back doing an exciting new installation. And the very next day, she will be on HGTV's Brother versus Brother competition show. So it's so great to see local talents, you know, going good, and we want to cheer on the hometown girl. We also have... We have Miguel Paredes, another local artist, who's going to be tagging some Fiat components for our sponsor, Rick Hayes Fiat. And
so much more.
So much more. So very much more.
And we want to let you know ArtServe is located at 1350 East Sunrise Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. Once again, for more info, artserve.org or call 954-462-8190. We have been speaking with Jay Abate, the brand new president of ArtServe. Good luck to you all. Magnificent organization. Bravo.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, we'll cover the Coral Gables Art Cinema. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and Jody Horn-Leschinski offers her Broward County Arts Calendar. Now, the Symphony of the Americas opens its Summerfest tonight, and Charles Greenfield has all of the details about their Tri-County extravaganza.
While summer weather continues its humid descent into sticky discomfort, there's no need for despair as the great sounds of classical music wend their way throughout the northern regions of South Florida. From tonight to Sunday, August 4th, Fort Lauderdale's Symphony of the Americas, a designated major cultural institution in Broward County, and American Airlines present Summerfest under the baton of Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese, the E. Musici Chamber Orchestra of Italy, and musicians from Symphony of the Americas. Besides the music of Dvorak, Telemann, Purcell, Verdi, and Piazzolla, Summerfest will feature Remembering Naples by composer Guido Galterio and a world premiere suite for string orchestra commissioned for Summerfest 2013 by Italian composer and soloist Lorenzo Turchi Flores, Summerfest composer in residence. Performances are highlighted by the symphony's principal flutist, Marilyn Maingart, Summerfest concertmaster Orlando Forte, and violinist Svetlana Forte in two alternating programs which will enable audiences to attend more than one performance. Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese received his doctorate in opera conducting and musicology from Washington University, coached in a masterclass on Bach under the baton of Pablo Casals, and has studied with mentors like Leonard Slatkin of the St. Louis Symphony and Richard Karp of the Pittsburgh Opera. In 2005, Maestro was honored at Washington's Kennedy Center with the Hispanic Heritage Foundation's Award for the Arts in recognition of his lifelong work as a world-renowned conductor and his dedication to promoting classical music to youth around the world. Recently, I talked to James Brooks Bruzzese about the 2013 Summerfest concerts with E. Musici Chamber Orchestra of Italy, joined by musicians of Symphony of the Americas. Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it very much.
What is the mission statement of the Symphony of the Americas, and how would you describe its cultural role in Broward County? It's a quarter century, I believe.
You want all of that in one sentence?
All right.
Our mission is really threefold. First of all, is we have a symphony series, which takes place in Broward. And then secondly, we have a very fine educational series in which we play to children, that we bring them to the theater. We also go to their schools. We have had private lessons. And our third part of our mission is a festival, which we're going into right now. In fact, in a couple of days, they'll be coming over here, and we start our 22nd year of the summer music festival called Summerfest. And this year, we're working with an orchestra from Italy.
Well, let me talk a little bit about Summerfest. You'll be playing small venues in Fort Lauderdale, Miami Lakes, Pembroke Pines, Weston, Pompano Beach, Vero Beach, Delray Beach, and Sunrise. On Friday, August 2nd, you perform in your main hall in the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. Tell us briefly about the acoustics from the grand hall to the smaller halls.
Yes. Actually, we go in and we do a sound check before each one of those concerts so we can find a balance in which we can move either the cellos or the violins or whatever is necessary, or move the whole orchestra forward or backward. But there is the problem of acoustically finding the best sound you can get because you're in a different hall. Some of them are auditoriums, some of them are theaters, some of them are actual, you know, school places, but it's fun, and we're reaching out. The point for going into all these places is that the festival is allowed finally to reach out to venues and people that have never heard such great music, this caliber, on a smaller scale. And this is the main mission, to reach out. And the festival not only has been practically in every city in Florida, but it has been in every country in Central America, 4 countries in South America, 5 islands in the Caribbean, and 7 countries in Europe. So it has been around, and we're bringing to everybody not only the Symphony of the Americas, but about Florida and about Fort Lauderdale, which we like to do.
Now let's talk about Summerfest in more detail. How did you come up with the idea of combining an Italian ensemble with South Florida musicians? What about this merger?
This merger is really not just with this orchestra. Every year, we pick a different chamber orchestra. We used orchestras from the Czech Republic, from the Slovak Republic, from Italy, from Germany, from Budapest, from various areas, and we use our musicians. The idea is to have a cultural exchange so that our musicians and them, when they arrive here, can mix, learn their language, talk about food, learn to respect each other, and know more about the culture and the music, the diversity of exchanging of ideas on producing music and also promoting music. So this is quite a cultural exchange, which we're very proud of doing on our 22nd year.
Now, I Musici Estensi, I believe
Perfect.
It's called. The chamber orchestra from Italy has a deep track record in Europe with Baroque, original instruments, to 20th century pop, gospel, and jazz. That's quite a combo, isn't it?
It is. They have quite a repertoire. But that's why we have them. They're quite well known. All the orchestras, the chamber orchestras we bring, are well known throughout Europe and have traveled everywhere besides the United States.
Now, what about the original compositions for the Summerfest this year? You have Guido Galtero's work, Remembering Naples. It's said to be a repurposing of Neapolitan songs. What's his background and a little information?
Guido's from Naples.
Okay? He's from Naples.
And he is quite a composer, and he's a fantastic piano player, first of all. In fact, he composed it last year, but he waited for us to arrive and do it this year. And when you hear it, you'll hear various popular songs from Napoli. You know, I'd sing a few now, but I don't want to ruin the program. But they are wonderful popular songs.
Songs like Funiculae.
Exactly. Funiculare, Funiculae. Yeah, songs like that that are mixed in with a string ensemble and piano. And it's a marvelous. And he has a couple solo instruments playing. A solo cellist opens it and a solo violin comes in on the end there. But it's a wonderful piece. But we're not only doing that as an opening. We have a couple Florida premieres. The Preludio from La Traviata by Giuseppe Verdi is a Florida premiere. But everybody knows it. But that's why we're doing it, because it's so beautiful. But this arrangement, done by our good friend Alessandro Cadario, is wonderful to listen to, and it's beautiful. Another Florida premiere is the Della Bacqua Concerto. But a world premiere is going to be done by the artistic director and conductor of the Musici Estensi, but also an arranger, a pianist, and a wonderful gentleman, Lorenzo Turchi Flores. And he wrote a piece for us called Peace for String Orchestra. And so we're going to be premiering that. That is a world premiere. And we have our own concertmaster, Orlando Forte, who is our concertmaster here and our associate concertmaster for the big orchestra, who has taken a wonderful piece by Piazzolla, Fugata, and he has arranged it for the string orchestra, which everybody will love.
Well, you know, I'm interested a little bit about your rehearsing, actually, when you get ready for the performance. I spoke to Michael Tilson Thomas a few years ago, and he told me about 6 rehearsals on average. Could you describe your approach to the flow of rehearsals from first to final?
Well, first of all, our rehearsals begin in Europe. I rehearse the orchestra. We go over there and I rehearse the orchestras because we do a recording. So we do 3 rehearsals, and then we go in and do a recording. And the recording continues after there. We come back here, and then we'll do about 2 more rehearsals to review, to clean up, and then we start our concerts. So by the end of the 12th concert, we have it down pretty good.
12?
We have 12 concerts here, and we have 6 concerts in Panama.
Right.
And so we have to include the 3 concerts in Europe.
All right. So your total number of rehearsals before performance is about 5 or 6?
Yeah, basically. Sure.
Thomas is right then.
Yeah.
Now, the compositions you'll perform on the July-August South Florida tour you've talked about, and how do you decide on the degree of difficulty in terms of those compositions in reactions to a summer festival audience? How much can they take?
Well, the degree of difficulty, does it apply to the orchestra or the audience? If it applies to the orchestra, then it's a different ballgame. I have to look at it and listen to it, and then when we go over it, sometimes it's not feasible to have it done in time to begin the festival because it demands a lot of extra rehearsals. But I send the music over ahead of time and some recordings and things, and when I get there, they should have at least be prepared and ready to rehearse it, not learn it.
Right.
There's a difference between learning it and putting it together to make it sound wonderful and put the musical aspects to it rather than learning it. And they basically do, so we're ready for that. When it comes to an audience, I try to diversify the program. Like here, if you notice, I have some pieces from Italy. I've got some Spanish pieces. I've got the concertos. I have a premiere that's a little more modern, but not too modern, so the audience would like it. And then I have the wonderful Piazzolla to finish it off. So that's what I try to do, because I'm also dealing with a lot of Hispanic audiences, plus I go to South and Central America.
Well, you know, I think that our audience will be very pleased to go to these concerts this summer. It ends in August, but it starts up very soon. The first concert is...
Our festival begins tonight with a program at the Sunshine Cathedral in Fort Lauderdale. We hope to see all of you there.
And, of course, our listeners can go to your website, which I'll give a little later on. And finally, I want you to give us a brief preview of the Symphony of the Americas and their upcoming fall-winter season. Some tango, Mozart, and 2 aspiring young musicians, pianist Ciro Foderi and violinist Aisha Said.
Yes. We're very excited because this will be our 26th season. And now we're excited. We're going into our second 25 years.
Second 25 years. Well, on that
second quarter of a century, we're starting it. We're going to go, too.
On that note, we all are getting a little older, so I want to thank you so much for attending South Florida Arts Beat, Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese.
It's my pleasure, and thank you so very much, and I hope you come out and catch some of the concerts.
South Florida has matured in its summer offerings in the past decade. In Broward County, Symphony of the Americas under Maestro James Brooks Bruzzese with American Airlines and sponsored in part by Hyatt Regency Pier 66, Luxury Hotels and Resorts, Sun Sentinel, Wells Fargo, Madeline Savarik, Funding Arts Broward, Broward Cultural Council, and Board of County Commissioners. They've created a terrific opportunity for various communities to enjoy a cool evening of classical favorites from Dvorak to Verdi to various commissioned works. For further information, please contact Symphony of the Americas, their office number at 954-335-7002, or online at symphonyoftheamericas.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and Jody Horn-Leschinski features her Broward Arts Calendar. Now, film critic Dan Hudak continues his reports about South Florida's independent cinemas.
It's such a natural fit and mainstay in the heart of Coral Gables, it's almost a surprise that the Coral Gables Arts Cinema didn't open until late 2010. What's not a surprise is the success the theater has had since opening its doors, offering an eclectic mix of the most buzzed about foreign and independent films, in addition to family programming and other special events. This weekend, the single-screen theater is showing Before Midnight, the third part of director Richard Linklater's wonderfully romantic and jarringly real trilogy starring Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And next weekend, the theater will feature the debut of acclaimed director Pedro Almodovar's I'm So Excited, a silly farce about an airplane trip from Madrid to Mexico that goes horribly awry. Also this weekend are special early afternoon screenings of the National Theatre of London's production of The Audience, which features Helen Mirren as Queen Elizabeth II as she, over the course of 60 years, meets with England's Prime Minister every single week. The play was written by Peter Morgan, who also wrote The Queen, and was directed by Stephen Daldry. We recently sat down with Coral Gables Art Cinema director Robert Rosenberg and cinema president and founder Stephen Krams to discuss the theater and how Miami's art house scene is on the rise. Robert, Stephen, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
It's great to be here on Arts Beat.
Today, we begin the sixth week of Before Midnight at the theater. It's a phenomenal movie. It deserves the long run, and it's been one of your best sellers, right?
Absolutely.
Has it surprised you that it's lasted this long?
Well, you know, it is definitely one of the best films I've seen this year. It's got one of the highest ratings on the, you know, aggregators like Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes. So in that sense, no, it's really a high visibility film. On the other hand, it's a film about a man and a woman in a long-term relationship talking and arguing throughout the almost 2 hours of the film, so you're not sure that it will stick, but it has.
You know, expectations are everything with a film like this. And that, the fact that there are two films that preceded it, you have this audience already built in.
Yes.
And now the expectation is, are we going to be where we were, pick it up where we were, what's going to happen? And so you have that audience plus a whole new audience that can see this as a standalone piece. So it was unique.
So, Stephen, you must be very happy with Robert for the success of the programming. What is your role in the day-to-day operation of the cinema?
Day-to-day, I have little to do with the theater. Unless Robbie needs some assistance in some way, whether it's in programming, administration, or some executive decision, it really is up to Robbie day-to-day to run the theater. It's his staff to supervise. And he needs me. He's on the phone with me.
I did want to ask you this question because it's a nonprofit theater. And, Stephen, you're a longtime film industry professional, so there's probably no one else in South Florida who's better suited to speak to this than you are. It's that your Regal, your AMC chains, they're for-profit. They make their money through concession sales mostly and then box office sales as well. But the art cinema, being a nonprofit, might have a different focus. How does the art cinema approach its business model?
It's a totally different business model. And if you try to apply the for-profit movie theater business model to what we're doing, you'll lose your backside. Excuse my reference. But that's the fact of the matter. There, if it wasn't the case, there would be these single-screen non-for-profit theaters all over the country. Right. What makes us unique is that we give an opportunity, as part of our mission statement now, to bring to the screen a lot of film that doesn't ordinarily get to the commercial cinemas. And so that's where Robbie's expertise comes in. He's so familiar with that scene. He's up to date. He's on top of it. And he's bringing to us all the latest and the greatest of what's out there.
Well, and one benefit of being a nonprofit is that you're able to apply for grants. And so your Knight Foundation grant that's coming through is going to bring all sorts of new riches to the theater as well.
I was going to say, we also do a lot of things that a commercial movie theater wouldn't or couldn't do. We have panel discussions and we fly filmmakers in, more like a film festival. And then this Knight Foundation grant, which is a matching grant of $150,000 over 3 years, is supporting two new projects, one of which is the launching of the Miami International Children's Film Festival in late October in partnership with the New York International Children's Film Festival, which will allow us to bring really films that we couldn't even bring runs of here, but that are international art house films for kids and do workshops and special events for the kids. Plus, the other leg of that grant is the Miami Film Development Project, which is, again, trying to expand what we're doing beyond showing films. This is going to be an intensive laboratory, ongoing laboratory for local filmmakers to develop feature films, narrative feature films, fiction films based and set in South Florida. And I can't announce it today on the air, but we will be bringing in a very well-known independent filmmaker for a screenwriting intensive laboratory in late fall that will be a real, I think, a game changer for what goes on in South Florida.
Awesome. And Stephen, I want you to speak to this as well, because it's been my understanding that art houses in South Florida have gotten kind of a renaissance of late with, you know, the success of the Cosford, Cinematheque has a new home, the Art Cinema opened in late 2010, great success. There's been kind of a rebirth. So if you would speak to that and kind of brag about your theater, because of all the art houses down here, you guys are the only ones who can show something in 4K, which is the highest resolution possible to put on a theater screen. And you're the only one who's showing something in 3D. So that's pretty awesome.
That's really very technical. I think the key to it is the content. I mean, it's wonderful that we have a well-appointed theater, and part of that is because I'm in the business of doing that. I design movie theaters and build them all over the world. But the real reason we are the success that we are is the content of what we're putting on the screen and the quality of the presentation. That's really the essence of it. So if you had a poor projection, nobody wants to see that on a screen, but you have all the elements together, everything works together, and you have the right content, now you have a winning combination. And it also raises the bar in the community in general, so that if we're doing this at this level, then the others would like to do at least as well or better.
And do you feel that there's a resurgence in interest in...
Absolutely. But I think that's more a reflection of what's happening to our community in terms of culture in general, that we're maturing as a community, and where maybe we were only able to support one or two screens and maybe not so successfully, but now because of the nature of the community and the interest in the arts, we're able to support five screens.
And you guys are also able to offer stuff like The Audience this weekend. It's Helen Mirren on stage as Queen Elizabeth, again, written by Peter Morgan, who wrote The Queen. Robert, talk a little bit about bringing The Audience to the Art Cinema. And then also next weekend, we have the new Almodovar movie. I'm so excited.
That's a lot of films to talk about. Well, in addition to our main feature of the week, or that runs for 6 weeks, like Before Midnight, we do bring in on weekends special event programming, usually some kind of it's live to tape, high definition performances from around the world. The Helen Mirren, The Audience play is from the National Theatre of London, and those are always plays that are currently on stage in London, so you're getting to see it just tape delayed essentially here, and that's been a huge, huge hit for us. It's a wonderful production. We also are bringing in a production of a flamenco dance theater from Spain later on in July. So we're trying to – that adds to our bottom line. It adds to what we offer the community culturally. It brings in audiences that might not yet be thinking about Before Midnight, but then they come in to see Helen Mirren, let's try the film later kind of thing. So it diversifies what we do. But as you said, on Friday, July 19th, we are opening the new film from Pedro Almodovar. I'm so excited. And we're very excited to have it with us.
And after that upcoming, we also have the new Woody Allen, Blue Jasmine coming. Talk quickly some of the other things you have coming up.
We have Blue Jasmine, which is the new Woody Allen film that no one's seen publicly yet, is going to be August 9th. And this is sort of Woody Allen and Almodovar have been our two highest grossing directors in the past. So it's kind of like our blockbuster summer following Before Midnight. It really is a blockbuster summer. There's nothing in the fall that I'm at liberty to say yet, but we should have some groundbreaking, challenging films from Israel, the United States, whole range of films you'll be seeing that come out of the Cannes, Sundance, Toronto lineups.
Awesome. And I'm excited to see them. Stephen, Robert, thank you very much for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Coral Gables Art Cinema is one block north of the Miracle Mile at 260 Aragon Avenue in Coral Gables. This weekend at the theater, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy star in Before Midnight, and Helen Mirren reprises her Oscar-winning role as Queen Elizabeth II on the West End in The Audience. For more information, go to GablesCinema.com or call 786-385-9689. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food, Marco Polo. I have heard the sing-song voices of children in the swimming pools of hotels I've stayed in from Hattiesburg to Honolulu as they play a game called Marco Polo. First child, Marco. Second child, Polo. I still don't understand the rules or goals. The children go up and down in the water, constantly repeating his name. Are they seeking each other? Does it have an end? Marco Polo figures so often in food history that there is the debate whether most of what he had reputedly accomplished is pure PR. The closest other example may be the squabble around the authenticity of Shakespeare. Poor Shakespeare, he seems to be all but forgotten in swimming pool games. As many know, Marco Polo was born to a Venetian merchant family. His father, Nicola, and uncle, Maffeo, were not poor, but they couldn't afford to hire others to do their buying and selling. So they cut out those middlemen and hit the road, eventually bringing Marco along in 1271, when Marco was just 17 years old. It was not the scary Genghis Khan that was ruling during the Polo's wandering. It was the more intellectual Kublai Khan, the grandson of Genghis. He was also known as the Wise Khan. The con man took a real liking to Marco and entrusted him with access and even power not known to a European so far from home. Marco picked up the language and a mania for travel unknown since Tony Bourdain. Though the Mongols had dominated the trade routes, they sporadically allowed more merchants to come in and out of the region. However, they never abandoned their nomadic lifestyle. Too much fun, I guess. Marauding must have its charms. Trade on the Silk Road was a significant factor in the development of the civilizations of China, the Indian subcontinent, Persia, Europe, and Arabia. The ancient caravan route linked central China and the eastern Mediterranean. It took its name from the silk that was brought to the west from China. Though silk was the major trade item, many other goods were traded, as well as various technologies, religions, and philosophies. Oh, and another detail, the bubonic plague, or the Black Death, if you prefer, also traveled along the Silk Road. Marco Polo. The spices that Polo recorded included black pepper, nutmeg, spikenard, I will have to look that one up, galangal, cubebs, cloves, and others. It boggles the mind as to how importantly these spices not only changed Europe over time, but made it more bearable. Cuisine without black pepper would be a vastly different place. And what of nutmeg? Cloves? And spikenard? Well, that may be yet to come. Inspired by the Silk Road, I conjured up a concoction that I dubbed the Mongolian Marinade. I submerge a large raw veal chop in it overnight and let it get deeply flavored. The next day, I set it forth on a barbecue-type grill until it is crusty at the edges, glazed all over, juicy within, and alive with the Silk Road spices. Ironically, Marco Polo would probably not be known unless he had landed in jail. It was in Genoa where he shared his stories with other prisoners. The Travels of Marco Polo was not penned by the famed Venetian traveler himself, but a fellow inmate, Rustichello da Pisa. Rusty of Pisa, I guess. Marco died in that prison in 1324. History remembers the storytellers. Or let's hope. Marco Polo! I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West Kitchen and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in this coming Saturday morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Cut Up. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome today Jody Horn-Leschinski, Community Development Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Great to have you back with us, Jody.
It's great to be back.
And I'm excited to hear about all the wonderful things going on in Broward County.
And there's so much happening. I don't know how to cram it all in, so I'm going to talk very fast today. First of all, Broward Cultural Division is so proud to announce that they are the recipient of 4 National Awards of Excellence from
Wow.
the National Association of County Information Officers.
Bravo.
And thank you. And that is for projects that show expertise in public communication. So we're really proud of that. Good communicators here. And speaking of communications, we have the new issue, the July issue of Cultural Quarterly, available online. And Cultural Quarterly is a fine arts magazine that provides in-depth articles on the local arts and culture scene, revealing profiles of exceptional artists and links to detailed event listings through artscalendar.com. You can read about artist Victoria Gitman, who provides insight on her premise that desire is in the details. Scott Miller shares secrets about the new fine arts building that is inspiring a Broward College renaissance. And then public art administrator Leslie Fordham reveals details on Broward County's unique Dwayne Hansen Allied Artist Program. There's many more articles, so subscribe today to Cultural Quarterly by going to broward.org/arts. If you're traveling through the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport, be sure to stop at the Lee Wagner Art Gallery in Terminal 2 on the departures level to visit Broward artist Harumi Abe's artwork. And it's titled 134 Days and 21 Hours, and it will be on display through September 30th. The Lee Wagner Art Gallery, supported by Broward Cultural Division's Public Art and Design Program and Broward County Aviation Department, offers Broward artists an opportunity to exhibit their work in a prominent, high-traffic area. All right, here come the events now in fast motion. If you're interested in art, Who Am I to You? The South Florida Cultural Consortium juried exhibition is on display through September 1st at the Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale. This annual exhibition of the recipients of the South Florida Cultural Consortium Visual and Media Artists Fellowship features the work of 14 artists from 5 South Florida counties, from Martin all the way down to Monroe. Juried by both a regional and national panel of experts, this exhibition is always an eye-opener and serves as a barometer of both established and emerging talent. If theater is what you're looking for, the Performance Project presents Disney's The Little Mermaid through Sunday at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. One of the most celebrated animated films of all time and winner of 2 Academy Awards comes to life on stage this summer, performed by the Broward Center's talented core of summer theater camp young professionals. The Museum of Discovery and Science and AutoNation IMAX Theater hosts the film Pacific Rim, an IMAX 3D experience, now through August 12th. When legions of monstrous creatures started rising from the sea, a war began that would take millions of lives and consume humanity's resources. 2 unlikely heroes are teamed up as mankind's last hope against a mounting apocalypse. Downtown Hollywood is featuring a series of family-friendly, free movies. Arts Park Movie Night presents the film My Big Fat Greek Wedding tonight at 8 p.m. Bonnet House Museum and Gardens presents Saturdays Are Cool tomorrow through September 21st on the first and third Saturdays of the month. Gourmet food trucks will also be on site from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Symphony of the Americas Summerfest 2013 takes place tonight at 8:30 at the Sunshine Cathedral and on Sunday at 4:30 at the Trinity Lutheran Church. For the past 22 years, Symphony of the Americas annually hosts an acclaimed European chamber orchestra of cultural exchange performances throughout Florida and the Americas. This year, they will welcome I Musici Estanzi Chamber Orchestra from Milan, Italy. Jazz in the Gallery will offer the sweet sounds of cool jazz presented by guitarist Devin Arne and Trio on Sunday at 2 p.m. at Nova Southeastern University. The diverse musician blends hip-hop and electronic music into his straight-ahead jazz. Tonight and tomorrow at 8 p.m., the Miramar Cultural Center presents Organic Love, a heartfelt romantic comedy that toys with modern notions of love tested in its truest form. Broward Stage Door Theater presents Character Man now through August 11th. Carbonell and Drama Desk Award winner Jim Brochu puts his stamp on an original musical valentine to The Great White Way. Opening off Broadway in the fall, this tribute to Broadway's greatest character actors features the songs they introduced to musical theater. The Retro Beach Ball bounces in on Saturday at CNI Studios in Fat Village in downtown Fort Lauderdale. The Retro Beach Ball is a vintage dance bash that will turn back the clock to the jazz age with authentic swing dancing from the era, a vintage beachwear contest, and a shop full of retro goodies that will help get you in the mood. The dance lessons start at 7:30, and the dance bash goes from 8 to 11 p.m. Party like it's 1940. Pembroke Pines Theater for the Performing Arts presents Hairspray, weekends through August 4th at the Susan B. Katz Theater of Performing Arts. And last but not least, the Indie Craft Bazaar, Color Your Summer, takes place on Saturday at noon at Revolution Live and the Green Room in downtown Fort Lauderdale. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, South Florida's guide to art and culture. Never miss a thing. Get there.
So much going on in Broward County, and big thanks to Judy Horn-Lashinsky, the Community Development Director of Broward Cultural Division. Great weekend to you, Jody.
You too, and all your listeners out there.
Ten years after the passing of Celia Cruz, she continues to be remembered as one of Latin music's greatest sensations. The documentary Yo Soy Celia Cruz airs Tuesday, July 16th at 9 on WLRN-TV Channel 17. It repeats Saturday, July 20th at 7 and Sunday, July 21st at 7. Please tune in, WLRN-TV Channel 17. Fantastic violinist Federico Britos, vocalist Yvonne Brown, and Afro-Cuban jazz band Oriente perform tonight in the Olympia Theater at the Gusman Center. The concert is free and open to the public. Doors open up at 6 o'clock. Showtime is at 8. For more info, call 305-684-4564 or visit MiamiJazzSociety.com for more info. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our beautiful website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Lashinsky. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy!